Over the past couple of weeks, we've seen some important changes on immigration. The president announced a new plan to defer deportation for some young undocumented immigrants, and yesterday, the Supreme Court decision on Arizona's controversial immigration law. Much of writer Luis Alberto Urrea's career has focused on life along the U.S.-Mexican border and on the lives of the people who cross it. Now those stories are beginning to change a bit. Luis Alberto Urrea joins us here at the Pepke Auditorium. His books include The Devil's Highway, Into the Beautiful North, and The Hummingbird's Daughter, and it's good to have you with us today.
It's an honor to be here.
And there's a story you tell. We're going to get around this in a bit of an indirect fashion. There's a story you tell about a busboy in Illinois.
Ah, story swap, eh?
Yes.
You know, your viewers will have to look deeply into their radios to see that, ironically, I look rather Irish. That's where it begins.
Yeah.
And the reason is my grandmother was named Guadalupe Murray. Red-haired, blue-eyed Irish lass. So I make it a habit wherever I go to talk to the people who are taking care of us. We're here in this sacred, beautiful place of Aspen. But my people from where I come from are changing our sheets and scrubbing our toilets for us right now. And so I have a real habit of saying hi to people and talking because it's become an amazing thing for me. Story swap, oddly enough. And so we live in a suburb of Chicago, a conservative suburb, and there's a pancake restaurant where people go to have pancakes. And a lot of the really successful, wealthy businessmen gather there in the mornings before they go off to their great jobs. And we go there sometimes, my wife and I. And there's a busboy there. And I was intrigued by this man because he's very small in stature, and he actually looks like an Aztec warrior. Very short man, semi-indigenous features, long ponytail. But what really intrigued me is his arms are covered with 666 Satan dragons. And I thought, that dude's the heavy metal guitarist for sure, you know? Yeah. And I told my wife, he's also a Mexican, no question. And he's a busboy, and he's going all day. So as he was going by our table, I said, ¿Qué hubo, compadre? ¿Cómo estás? And he stopped, and he turned and looked at me, and I saw him blanch. And I realized he thought, ah, damn, immigration caught me. And I said, no, I'm from Tijuana. It's okay. And he was like, oh, really? You're Mexican? So we began talking.
You should have said O'Reilly, but
anyway. yeah, I'm a cousin of Colin McCann's, actually. No. So we began talking. And he's inescapable now because he wants to talk a lot. So he came one day and he told me this story that broke my heart. And I realized that everything we're trying to do with art is in this story. It stays with me all the time. And that was that he came here undocumented. He owns that. He came here from Mexico where he was a heavy metal guitarist because his parents became old and there was no social net to catch these people. They were plummeting into hell. And he gave up his music career. He gave up all of his dreams of Mexican rock stardom to come here because it was the only way he could make enough money to keep his mother and father alive in their old age. He hasn't seen them in years. He hasn't seen his brother in years. He actually paid for his brother's wedding without attending from the United States. So through various ways, a lot of people end up in Chicago. It's one of the hugest Mexican cities. You know, it's like the fourth largest Mexican city. I think it's, you know, Mexico City, Guadalajara, L.A., and Chicago.
Yeah.
Go figure, right? And he ended up at this restaurant. And he also, in the back of his mind, thought maybe he'd make it as an American rock star. With no English and, you know, the dream. So he's been working at this restaurant, attending to these men. Mostly men. They're businesswomen, too. And he notices a lump in his throat, and he's having trouble swallowing. So he goes to a public health clinic 6 miles away from the restaurant. Every morning before sunup, he rides a bicycle to work. Every night after sundown, he rides the bicycle back to this rooming house. 12-mile journey. So he goes to the free clinic, and they do tests, and they find out he has throat cancer. And he realizes he can't afford any kind of treatments. They can't do it for him. Mm. He can't do surgery. He has a death sentence on him. He doesn't understand why He's a straight edge heavy metal dude, so no drinking, no smoking, no drugs his entire life. Yet he has throat cancer, and he's thinking when he dies, his parents are going to die. And he confides in the waitresses, who are Americans. Now, the waitresses who have been feeding these gentlemen for 20 years start telling the clients, this poor guy has got throat cancer, and they start telling the story. So what happens? These strong Republican businessmen who don't like illegal immigration have looked in this man's eyes. He has served and taken care of them. They take up a collection amongst themselves, and they pay for his surgery and save his life. When he's recuperating, one of them buys him a fancy, expensive bicycle so he can get to work back and forth. So he tells me this story, and I said, so what are you going to do now? You've got your health. And he said, well, I'm going to stay here forever because I owe them service. And these good people you've just heard speak, I think it's something we've been sharing, that we realize that, you know, I think a place, I think a piece of land, I think a borderline, they're just places. What affects those places is the story attached to it. And I think looking in each other's eyes as human beings, hearing the art or the honesty of a story, or if we laugh, if there's humor, it's a kind of a virus that infects us with humanity. If I've shared your story with you, if I've shared your tears with you or your laughter with you, I can't then a minute later say, oh, by the way, you're not quite human and I don't like you anymore. There's this incredible power in it.
I can say the word immigration and our phones will be filled.
I know.
We want to hear stories of your experiences with immigrants today. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's begin here at the microphone at the Pepke Auditorium in Aspen.
Hi, my name is Walter Gallagher, and for the past 5 years, I've been collecting immigrant stories here in the Roaring Fork Valley, and I just want to underscore what has been said here, not only by Luis, but the other storytellers, that the power of story has really, the ability to change people's attitudes, and I've seen that firsthand. I've collected about 150 different stories of folks from all over the world that live in the valley.
And what is the one that has moved you the most?
I think the story that has moved me the most is the story of Ana Ariza, who came from El Salvador. And she was a child during the Civil War there. And I started by asking her a question about what were her holidays like. And she basically said, I didn't have holidays. That the 10 years that I was there, that was my childhood. And we just hid from the bad people.
During the Civil Wars there. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I wonder, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. And Luis Alberto Urrea, we were hearing earlier from Asaf Gavron about people in Israel who didn't want to hear stories from the other side. Any number of other sides as stories get complicated. And I'm sure that's not totally true in Israel. And I know it's not totally true in this country when you hear the stories that you tell and the stories that we've seen in films and books and otherwise. But this is part of the story. We get so outraged sometimes by issues, we don't look at the people behind those stories.
It's very difficult, but again, it's the nature of the story. How is the story told? If you don't have the endless drumbeat of the word illegal, then what is your impression of it? I'm in a funny position with a name like Luis Alberto Urrea. It's political no matter what I do. If I go on a radio show and I say, you know, I like fish tacos more than hot dogs, I will get an email saying I'm a traitor and should be executed. It's just, you know, go back to Mexico then. And I think one thing people don't know in this country is that people in Mexico don't want to hear the story. Like, don't tell me that garbage. You know, people don't want to hear about this stuff. And if you go into Mexico, I had this amazing experience, which you as a radio man will appreciate. I was in the Guadalajara Book Festival, a great book festival. And I was just, oh my God, you know, all these Spanish authors that I idolize. And I turned on talk radio one day, and the talk radio host, might have been Glenn Beck-O, I don't know, a Mexican one, was saying, I'm sick of these Honduran illegal aliens coming in. I'm sick of those Guatemalans. What we need is a wall on our southern border, and they're coming in and taking jobs, and they're taking free health care, and they're not part of our culture. And I thought, wow, that's really funny. It's as though you live in an episode of MASH. It's darkly funny, but it is funny that we're all human, and we all have these feelings.
We're talking with Luis Alberto Urrea. He looks Irish, but he can roll his R's much better than I can.
I see.
We're talking about stories of immigrants here at the Aspen Institute. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Lonnie on the mic here in the Pepke Auditorium.
Hi. So the stories that I know of local immigrants are of students here in the Valley who had a community safety officer who was placed in their school, who on the side was also working for ICE and was using information that he gathered from the students to deport these students' families. And they created an organization called AHUA, and they have been organizing their community. They've been doing incredible work trying to meet with the police, with the sheriffs, setting up meetings with the local the school district, trying to get this police officer removed and create a policy so that that doesn't happen anymore. And I think what I learned and what struck me is that a lot of these students are just, they're wise and experienced beyond their years. They're true leaders. They inspire me. I introduce my children to them so they can learn what it is to be, you know, real community organizers, real leaders in their community, and to stand up for their rights and hopefully to be able to go to college. These kids were mostly dreamers when they originally organized. And right now, this week, they're standing in line at local immigration attorneys' offices trying to figure out how to get in line with this new policy and try to achieve their dreams and their dreams of that their families have for them.
It's interesting. We live in a world where dreamers is a term of art. In this conversation, it reflects, it addresses a specific subset of the community that we're talking about. But I, getting back to the original idea of this segment, Luis Alberto Urrea, are these stories beginning to change? What's happened in the past couple of weeks?
Wow, it's kind of weird to watch all this happening, But I think a lot of stories are all of a sudden changing. I feel like there's been a logjam of intractable feeling about a lot of things, and for me personally, I cannot ignore or discredit the Arab Spring, for example, for changing feelings around the world about things, and I can't help but feel that there's this incredible upsurge of simple, basic humanity. You mentioned with Reza earlier about the internet, people all over the world now are having at least an informational democracy, and it's having a lot of effect. I'm a bit cynical because I'm a political agnostic. So, I say, okay, the Dream Act, sure, it's an election year, and my side wants to beat their side, and their side might pick a Latino vice president to try to beat my side. I understand we're in a chess game, but the symbolism of the Dream Act being at least protected a bit is very powerful, and you're watching all of a sudden an ignition of, I hate to say activism, of action. And I think we create coalitions without knowing it. We drop seeds without knowing it that sprout in ways we don't foresee or expect.
Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Isaac. Isaac with us from Camden, South Carolina.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Isaac.
I really like the show. Great topic. I want to share something with you guys that I think it's very pertinent with regard to the Dream Act. I immigrated to the United States in 1992 by legal means. But coming up in school, I made friends. Many more as I got through high school who were not legal. I'm very close friends with a family whose oldest son is illegal, but their two younger kids were born here in the United States. And I want to share with you a story, something happened to me that I think the DREAM Act will directly impact and change for the better. When I was in high school, I got a letter from my school that said I had made the honor roll. Upon further review, it was actually one of my peers. She had made the honor roll, not me. Her last name is also Lopez. It's actually happened for a while, and finally my mom went up to the high school and said, look, stop sending me these people's mail, especially since my kid's making C's. And when we graduated together. She graduated with honors. I went on to college because, you know, I was of legal status. Unfortunately, she did not have that opportunity. She went and worked illegally for a couple of businesses around town. And she ended up getting mixed up with a couple bad people and, got pregnant and had kids with this guy that treated her pretty poorly. And the last I heard of her is she, you know, was in jail for assault and battery.
And we know that story might have happened anyway, but you really worry about what might have been. Thank you very much for that story, Isaac. We appreciate it. And Luis Alberto Urrea, thank you very much for being with us today and telling us some of your stories as well. Appreciate it. Among other things, he's a nonfiction writer and novelist and a judge on the 3-Minute Fiction Contest for Weekend All Things Considered. Special thanks to Natalie Lacey and Sarah Halterman of the Aspen Writers Foundation, as well as to Susan Glaw and Collins Kelly and Andrew Todd with Aspen Public Radio. Thanks also to everybody who joined us here at the Pepke Auditorium today. Tomorrow, Kenneth Feinberg and deciding on the value of human life. Join us for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Aspen.